rifling through those long boxes.
It's gotta be here. Aha! Here it is!
And bagging those books.
I'm out of bags and boards again.
Welcome to your home for Star Wars comics.
The Cosmic Force Podcast.
A Youtini Podcast Network production.
And now, here are your hosts, Parker Kirk, Caleb Laminek, and Jacob Bosch.
Hello and welcome to The Cosmic Force, a weekly breakdown of the latest in Star Wars comics brought to you by the Youtini Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jacob, joined by my good friends, Oz and Caleb. This week, we're diving in on the finale of Mace Windu number 4 to give you our in-depth reactions and analysis. But Oz, Caleb, nice seeing you after another week. Oz, it's only been literally one day for us, but you know, it's fine. So how are the two of you doing?
Excellent. Half up. Have a stacked week in front of me right now. I've been surprisingly going through a ton of comics of various types now, so much we'll get into for some reason later, I'm sure. But yeah, it's been great. Oz, how about yourself?
It's good. I like that someone hosting a comics podcast says it's surprising that they're going through comics, but I know the feeling. Otherwise, though, yeah, things are good over here as well. The recent meeting Jacob is referring to is we recorded an episode of Bounty Hunt. If you've ever heard our other podcast, we
were technically two episodes.
We were talking about Tales of the Empire because we are getting that out of the way in order to prep for The Acolyte in just over 2 weeks. And that's all
like that soon
right now. Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't realize it's that soon.
June 4th. Actually, from the time of the 2 weeks from the time the listeners are hearing this episode. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And also, I think Tales of the Empire really vibes with comic enjoyers because of all the Inquisitor storylines. You know, so much of that has been told through the comics. It's been fun to see that. So if you're, you know, if you're a good fan of Charles Soule's Darth Vader and you like Tales of the Empire, definitely check out those episodes for Bounty Hunt. So, but some cool, I guess, Cosmic Force news is, if I am doing my math correctly, and by doing math, I mean going and looking at like what our podcast feed tells me, I think
it's next
episode, yeah, it counted for me. Next episode is our 100th episode. We've been around, I think, since like April of 2021, maybe. Does that sound right?
Jeez. Yeah, it was April of that year.
But we have taken some breaks, and we have been bi-weekly at times, so it has taken us 3 years, but we are going to hit 100 episodes. So we're not still entirely sure what we're going to do, but we'll definitely have some celebration of our, you know, our anniversary of sorts.
We're going to count down our top 100 Star Wars comic issues.
By host.
Each host. So.
Yeah.
It's like
it'll be about a 6 hour podcast.
Yeah, Oz, I'm assuming your son's not old enough for this yet. He might be close where you have like the 100th day of kindergarten type thing.
He's not old enough. I am old enough. I remember my 100th
day.
It was 30 years ago, but I do remember.
Yeah. Or you bring in like 100 with whatever, you know.
Yeah.
100 marbles or 100 penny, you know, something like that. We'll figure something along those lines.
This is something I'm too homeschooled to get, apparently.
100.
Regular school has about 9 months, which, you know, is something like 160 days of school. And you celebrate on the 100 mark, which falls sometime in the spring. No one really knows why, other than it's pretty cool.
I was about to say, maybe I should take a picture Monday because I'll be going back to school then.
There you go. Oh, yeah. Congratulations again.
Thank you. I'll be starting my master's MBA program. So
I will officially be the least educated person on this podcast. I think I probably technically already am, but I am college educated.
Well, one of us is leaving. One of us is going right back in. So in, I guess, probably like a year and a half, Oz, you're going to have to go get your master's. So
nope.
One of us.
I drop a toddler off at school and I pick him up, and that is my education. I actually just picked him up yesterday from his last day of his first year of preschool.
Wow.
Crazy. Y'all are getting all the inside family info for all of us this
year. But well, beyond that, I guess we can talk about what we've been reading recently. I think I might have mentioned this last time. I got the Visions manga,
yes.
Which is covering the Elder, Lopin Ocho, the Ninth Jedi, and the Twins, I believe. Yeah. And so far I have read the Elder and Lopin Ocho, and I think they've been both pretty fantastic. About to start the Ninth Jedi, which is still one of my favorite Visions episodes of all time. So I can't wait for that.
It's not that one's just called Ronin.
Elder is I mean, it's not gonna be helpful for the audio listeners, but there's a master and apprentice that land on a planet and fight literally an old Jedi or an old Sith man.
The old Sith dude. Yeah.
And so far they've been like pretty much a straight adaptations. It's been a while since I've watched these episodes. It felt like the Elder one had a little bit more on the beginning and end, or mainly the beginning. So kind of, you know, expands it just a little bit. And I'm hoping that kind of seems like what it might be for the Ninth Jedi as well. So even if it's just like a couple panels to give me a little bit more, I'm enjoying it. So.
Yeah, I totally forgot those came out since we talked about them. I don't have that or the Mando 2 one yet.
Also, it's interesting. It's always, I feel like, a gamble when you're getting Star Wars manga. This one is a Japanese right to left. So
I think that depends just on where it
originated.
Because the High Republic stuff is manga, but it was written for American audiences.
Right.
I'm sure it translated into
Japanese. And it was co-written by DJO and...
Justina Ireland did one.
Ireland, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, like I got... what was it for pre-comic book day? Guardians of the Wills, and that's left to right. And I was like, oh, okay. It's just like,
And Legends of Luke, I believe, also is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of manga adaptations. It's
Lost Stars, Princess Valderon,
Rebels. I think that maybe checks them all off. But yeah, I'm glad to hear that one's good.
Yeah, sure. Caleb, what about you? What have you been up to?
Jeez, I kept looking at Brian some of the stuff out. I'm like, I've been absorbing a lot of media. For reasons, I was kind of thinking about the comics I read as a kid and, you know, how fun they were. And I went back and I picked up a couple of the old Adventures of Tintin. Have you ever guys read any of old Tintin?
This is the dog, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, not Rin Tintin, which is a car, right?
Correct. It's the Belgian one by Hergé.
Yeah, it's on like every list of, you know, greatest comics of all time, it's one that like I've always thought about picking up. I know that you can't even get the whole run anymore because one of them has been banned for racial insensitivity.
Tintin in the Congo was his first one, and Tintin, you know, at the time he wrote it is when Belgium owned the Congo. So
yeah, it's but beyond that, everything I hear about it is positive.
It's really fascinating. It's really good to go back. Like these were his early ones were written in the 40s and all like that. It's really interesting. It's like his art is kind of minimalistic, but he like each page he has like full, like he had 16 like little miniature panels. It's fascinating how much he can do with like just each panel is like its whole action and its whole like subject and verb in each little panel. So where you start in one page is not where you'll wind up at the end of the page. It's really well done. Like if you want a good like starting off point, like. It was like one of the like top like French novels of all time. French language was The Blue Lotus. That's a really fascinating and good one there. I don't know. It just has like a lot of action, a lot of gunfights and like adventure. And I kind of miss when like media used to take you on adventures, if that makes more of a sense. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. Hey, Tintin goes to China or he goes to India or Peru. It's like, hey, remember when, you know, your fancy action heroes would take you to like, for like a better term, an exotic location, you'd have like a little bit of fun in the culture there. It was neat.
Remember when our heroes were members of imperial powers and were great?
I mean, it was like,
I think it is probably the least part, probably something to do with that method of storytelling.
I can definitely see that there. Now, to be fair, in the, Tintin and the Blue Lotus, like, which was written in the late 30s, like he mm-hmm. like the bad guys are the Japanese who are trying to take over and start wars in China. So it's like, hey, okay. Like this blatant imperialism is like are the bad guys here.
Based.
Fair. Fair.
It is relatively based for its time. It's for its time, it's not bad. Now, what is fully based and not necessarily for its time is Knights of the Old Republic. I started that one by John Jackson Miller again. Mm-hmm. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. God, that like opening issue ends on such a great moment, and like I love it. If you haven't read it, there's like in the first arc, it like clear like several people have a vision of something that's dark set's going to happen. And it's great because the vision does come true, just not in the way they were envisioning it. Like, I love it when a story writer, John Jackson Miller in particular here, like, it's like, hey, I'm going to call my shot. I'm going to write a prophecy, and I'm going to fulfill that over the next, like, 40, 30 issues.
Well, yeah, it's a good one. Have you finished that before, or is this...
I have finished that one before, okay. But I wanted to go back and, like, reread it, because I was doing, like, I kind of got to a point with the Tales of the Jedi. I'm like, oh, wow, that I didn't realize that these were supposed to be, like, 40 years after each other. I didn't realize these were cutting in right into each other. And then, book-wise, I finished off another really good one from the old days was Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Mm. That was a really good one. Yeah. If you want a really funny, like, Jeeves and Wooster or, like, P.G. Wodehouse sort of absurdist narrative, it's really, really good. And then I finally, dear listener, after months and months of being away, I've decided to pick up a Star Wars book. I'm doing a Rise of the Red Blade.
There you go.
Man, I love that book, which also is fitting given the Tales of the Empire.
Tales of the Empire definitely kind of encouraged me. Like, I should pick this one up. I'm interested in these characters, which were first introduced in the Darth Vader run there.
That's right.
It definitely, I'm just finished part one there. It definitely smacks of like, hey, like, you know, school's hard for people with ADHD.
Yeah. Man, I loved that. The opening of that book, because if we joked on our Tales of the Empire discussion that like we get hype about Order 66, which is very true, but this one starts in the Battle of Geonosis, which feels very similar in my hype levels, because I'm just like, hell yeah, a bunch of Jedi in a big Coliseum, and that's exactly what you get to see in this book. Like, all those glubs in the background of Attack of the Clones get their moment in the sun in those opening chapters.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's it definitely digs into that. And like, I want to go back and now rewatch that scene and see like, okay, like, you know, track the names and pull up Wikipedia and see exactly how many of them were referenced here.
That is exactly what I did after those chapters. I went back, and it's one of those scenes that like, yeah, it looks like it's from 2002 and there's some wonkiness to it, but it's just fun.
Also, speaking of, I think the day we're recording this is the anniversary of the release of Attack of the Clones. So I guess 22nd anniversary. Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, man. Shoot, I usually have that in my calendar every year.
I just saw people posting on Twitter. So, you know.
That's the funny thing about anniversaries. Like, yeah, they come every year. And so then they're just like one after the other. Like, Phantom Menace was 25. Let's stick on that for a while. And we'll do...
Dude, I felt like we were in Clone Wars anniversaries for like an eternity, because it was like, it's the micro series anniversary, it's the Attack of the Clones anniversary, it's the, you know, the Clone Wars like 3D anniversary.
Yeah.
And just like back to back to back.
You could do Clone Wars movie, Clone Wars series premiere, you know, season
Clone Wars, the rebirth of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
The ending of the Clone Wars.
Yeah. As for me, I haven't been doing much reading as per usual, but I did last week. I ventured to a random comic shop here in town that I'd never been to. And since I was there and I looked around for a while, I felt like I should buy something. I happened to notice this little cartoony comic with a little Golden Book spine. So I picked it up, and it was called Michael Mouse, which is a parody of Mickey Mouse. And I came to realize I had actually seen this dude's art online on like Instagram or Reddit or something, and he turned it into a comic, like a whole like 60 page comic book. It's just a blatant adult oriented parody of Mickey and Donald Goofy. It feels kind of like an extended family cutaway gag. Like, the whole thing is Michael calls up David Duck and gets him back into drugs, and then they go on this like crime spree. It's all, you know, it's not the most creative thing you've ever seen. It's all just like, what if we did cartoons but edgy? It's very well done.
I was about to say, coming to Adult Swim near you.
Yeah, it totally, like, I would have gone crazy for this in like 2007 when I was in college.
And, yes, I was 11, so.
Yeah. when you know, like, being edgy was still kind of edgy. So it definitely wasn't super original, but it was a fun read. And then I've been, you know, reading a lot of Star Wars and some other stuff, and so I was like, I just want to read some, like, good old-fashioned superheroes. So I've had Grant Morrison's Multiversity, the big DC event from like 10 years ago. It's been on my stack for a long time. I read a little bit of it when it came out, but then I'd got one issue in so far, and I remembered it's Grant Morrison, so it's not just good old fashioned superheroes. It's just like weird shit.
Yep.
And it's good, but like, I want to just, you know, Batman and Superman teaming up. So I look forward to finishing it, but then I'm going to just read some like Silver Age nonsense.
There you
go. Alec Benzer.
Well, those are some good ones. To be honest, when you put Michael Mouse in the show notes, I thought you were just being goofy. And you're like, oh, yeah, you know, I call him Michael Mouse. And yeah, it's like, no, it's actually.
It's Michael's his Christian name.
Yeah, Michael. This is like Mickey Mouse origins before he got the nickname. You know, like, right. Solo. Like, what do we call you? Call me Mickey.
Michael.
Yeah. There's not a moment like that in that book.
Yeah. Well, we should go on to some news, because we have a lot of small things and then one big piece of news. First thing is, some of the free comic book day issues are starting to pop up on digital platforms. I've specifically seen the Dark Horse one be available now for free. So like Google Books or Kindle or whatever, try and find it there. I am not sure about the Marvel one yet, but hopefully those are coming soon. Another one is, we've talked a little bit about the Echoes of Fear miniseries, but there was a Comic-Con in Portsmouth in the UK with a High Republic panel, so they gave a little bit more information about that. And one thing interesting I saw was there was a issue 2 solicit, and Oz and I had a bit of this conversation off air, but it mentions Barnabas Vim and his Padawan Vix Phonix from the Quest of the Jedi one-shot from Phase 2. And Quest of the Jedi is famously not been collected anywhere. I thought they were going to do a Phase 2 omnibus, and we still have not seen that been announced from Dark Horse.
If they did, we don't know if it would be in there. Like, let's.
That is correct. They did put all the like various one shots from IDW Phase 1 eventually in the Dark Horse collections, but this is something that's been noticeably absent. I am now of the opinion that it could be collected in the eventual Echoes of Fear miniseries.
I totally agree.
It is there's very little of that single issue that is tethered to Phase 2 specifically, and even the bit that is like, there's a little framing story with Aslan Rael, who's going to also probably be in this miniseries. So,
and he was not in the Dark Horse Phase 2 comics. Like,
correct.
The book could not be less related to what DJO did with High Republic Adventures. I know that's going to bother some people because it's a Phase 2 book getting collected with Phase 3 stuff.
And this still might not happen.
Yeah, we are speculating. Pretty confident that you're right on this. That would be weird, but I think I'd be okay with it. Depending on how the story plays out.
As long as it's collected somewhere. I mean, it'd be a Phase 2 story and a Phase 3 collection, but we've also had the non-High Republic Insider short story collections that have Legends banners on them, despite being half-canon. So, you know, this is less crazy.
That one I'm not okay with.
I don't
own that book. Not really for that reason, just because I don't want to pay full price. I already have a bootleg version of it. Don't tell Lucasfilm, please.
Yeah, or Titan.
Yeah, whoever owns the rights. I don't know. Regardless, I'm stoked for this series because I liked Quest of the Jedi when it finally came out. But it was, you know, it's 40 pages or whatever, and then it was just over. And it's like, so what was significant about this?
So why? It's definitely going to come out in this miniseries. And I'm also excited that this will be coming out. I think the first issue comes out before the next YA book that has Wreath and Amadeo in it, so it should be probably, that's also by George Mann, so there should be probably some interplay between those stories. So
nice. It's kind of interesting that Claudia Gray is not seeming, I mean, I'm sure she's involved in the planning just since she wrote the Quest of the Jedi.
Yeah, she'll be back for Into the Light, I suppose, but that's about it for now. But we have a little bit more, another small thing we talked about in our two episodes ago for Saber for Hire. There was a character called Lean in it. We're like, that might be Link. That's probably Link Astana from Dooku Jedi Lost. Kevin did confirm that on Instagram. So there you go.
Man, I am shocked.
Yeah. Big time shocker. And then the last real big piece of news from that same Comic-Con in the UK, there's a new miniseries coming from Dark Horse called Dispatches from the Occlusion Zone. It's a 4-issue miniseries from Dark Horse with various writers, including Daniel Jose Older, Alyssa Wong. It's a big thing because they did not have any Star Wars stuff lined up at all.
That we knew of prior to now. Well, now we do.
And Kevin Scott, with various artists, did not list any particular. The cover artist, though, is Jake Bartok, who is, I guess, fan artist turned professional artist. He has done a few Star Wars things now, most notably, I think, Stories of Jedi and Sith.
Yeah, whatever it was called.
Tales of the Jedi and Sith.
Collection.
Yeah.
I think stories. Yeah, which he did two covers for that because I got the exclusive one at Celebration a couple years ago. I mean, he's been doing fan art for several years now. And he's very prolific and getting well known that it often feels like it's official art.
He's been doing official art for like various indie, quote unquote, comic covers for a while. Like he's been doing Star Trek stuff, I know. But yeah, this is, I think, his first Star Wars comic cover.
Yeah,
so that's pretty cool. He
notably, you pointed out, now that he's basically an official Lucasfilm artist,
yes,
we can consider his fan art of
Ciri and Fontu to be canon.
Does his backlog become canon now?
Yeah, I think so.
Actually, no, but in my heart, yes. In absence of anything else.
At some point, I'm going to call this shot now. They will put his art somewhere for Ciri and Fontu because they clearly can't be bothered to ask someone else to draw it.
Yeah. Well, so this miniseries is releasing the first issues in October. And another cool thing Kevin mentioned on his newsletter, in fact, was he's writing issue 4. And it's going to feature Ty York after the events of Saber for Hire, as well as Keeve Trinnis, who, quote, no longer goes by the title of Jedi Master. So again, Dooku Jedi Lost likely references with her or a Master Trinnis being part of the Lost 20. So,
which is the Lost 19 at that point.
Correct. Yeah.
I'm stoked for this. It seems like it's going to be sort of an anthology situation. But the one thing that I'm not sure about, just this is very High Republic. It's how it's been. I'm used to it by now. But Akiv's story being in this book means her story is going to go from Tales of Light and Life, the young reader's anthology or young adult, to the Marvel comic, to the audio drama, to the Dark Horse comic.
That's correct.
Which, that's just kind of annoying.
And let's be real, probably back to a Marvel comic after it's over.
And then and then probably Trials of the Jedi at the end.
Yep.
I don't know. I've made my peace with it, but it's difficult to explain this to people. And we do it a lot.
Yeah.
I think we're good at it, but
yeah, so
it's almost like it's our entire brand is trying to get people to introduce complicated scenarios.
Yeah.
And there's only so much we can do from a comics podcast, unfortunately. There are a few other characters on the cover of the first issue that, you know, we're likely to see pop up. So those are Elzar Mann, Quart, Crash Ongwa, Emric Kaftor, and then a Martian helmet's in the background. So I don't know if that means he's going to be a character or, you know, it's just vibes. So
I love that Emric's making a return here, which again, his story trajectory is kind of weird, but he's from, what's it called?
Trail of Shadows. Yeah.
Trail of Shadows. That's cool to see him again. And, I hope his girlfriend's in it too.
She's been in High Republic Adventures for Phase 3 a little bit.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Cyan Holt
playing
in the back. Playing, the keyboard or whatever.
the Valacord, maybe. I don't actually know what a Valacord looks like.
No, I have no idea. But yeah, so that's all exciting. Yeah, again, that's coming in October. So lots of comics that we can talk about in the future. But we have one comic that we actually need to talk about today, and it's been 25 minutes, so we should probably get on to that.
Yeah, this has been one of our longer intros in a long time. We kind of lost the plot here.
Yeah, it's fine. But we're here to talk about Mace Windu, issue 4, the finale, or is it, written by Mark Bernardin with art from George Genty and colors from Andrew Dahlhouse. So Caleb, bring us home. What happened in this issue?
All right. Confronted by two Luddite cultists, Mason and Anita split up and defeat their various assailants. But the boss arrives, called the Shroud. He confronts Mace about the Force, the Jedi's control over it, and how misguided he is, all while the Shroud displays mysterious powers. Even dropping a freighter on the villain does not stop him, so Anita destroys her ship, and with it, all the Ultra Coaxium, escaping with Mace to the Jedi Temple.
And notably at the very end, it says the end.
As the Shroud of villain's hand like reaches out from the wreckage there.
Yeah. Which we should note is the third time that has happened in 2024. Because we got the Rick Duel story ended
at the end?
Now I know that was just a little 8-pager, but then notably Thrawn Alliances.
And then this. We also got Dr. Aphra, which said Dr. Aphra will return, but did not, you know, we still have no idea where.
Yeah, so then I would say that's 4. Now, this one versus Alliances had an ending. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, yeah, it also had a sort of a tease, but at least it was a story.
Right.
Like a complete story. So I'll give it credit there, but it's kind of tiring. I don't know. It's the nature of Star Wars. Like, yeah, it never ends, but they can
end. Yeah, so we've talked about this a little bit beforehand. I am very much of the mind that this is going to lead into the Mace Windu Glass Abyss novel.
Because in August?
It got delayed from, it was going to originally be like June or July, but yeah, it was getting delayed to August or October, I want to say. One of the lines from the villain is, I looked deep into the heart of the Force. I stood at the edge of the abyss and surrendered myself to it. So, hey, the word abyss. And then again, obviously at the very end, he is not dead. So.
Yeah. Also they're, what are they called? Dreamweavers here.
Dusk Weavers.
But then the solicit for the novel mentions dream weaving.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So it's very similar. It's not the same, which is kind of weird. It could happen. It'd be odd, in my opinion, for them not to tell us. Because, like, for instance, the first Alphabet Squadron novel did that with TIE Fighter.
TIE Fighter, yeah.
It has that annoying crossover banner on the hardcover for Alphabet Squadron, which messes up the cover art, but it also actually has like 8 pages
preview
of the comic in the book. But regardless, they like advertise that as a crossover event, so that seems like this would be an opportunity to do that, and they didn't.
The other thing is, like, again, I know I've been predicting on the show for months that the next main era of Star Wars comics is prequels. So that's another thing that it could be just, hey, this is teasing that there's going to be more Mace Windu comic stories in the future and not going into the book.
I like that idea. I mean, I think that it definitely means, guess what? We could bring this back, even if it's not called Mace Windu number 5.
Right.
Whatever. But I don't know. That's the ending, though. There was a whole
lot of
this issue.
Exactly. Yeah, and, you know, for kind of an action-packed series, it kind of had an action-packed finale. I will say that there's egg on my face. I think the last issue we talked about was like, oh, yeah, and this last issue is going to take place in space.
Mm. Almost.
Yeah, they head that way at the end.
Yep, but not a star in the sky up there.
Not to complain too much. I will say I thought it was a little silly that they blew up a ship full of coaxium and it just was like, oh, the ship blew up and not like, the town is gone.
especially since it was ultra coaxium. Right. Well, maybe because it was like refined and I felt like she was kind of, her sample was like super unstable though. So
it's like in Crimson Rain, they shoot a coaxium bullet and it blows up a starship. And here we have a whole starship full of coaxium. So
I'm sorry, who shoots a coaxium bullet?
Imaravex.
Imaravex, that's right, my girl. Yeah, that's so sick. I thought the same thing, that it was a very contained explosion, but I can live with that.
Yeah, it's fine, whatever. What did you think of, like, what do we think about the whatever the Shroud as a villain?
I really liked him, honestly. I thought it was when he first introduced, like, oh, here comes the boss, can't wait to kill him off and have like the rest of the and just have like an extra bad guy to beat at the very end. But I don't know, the more he started talking, the more like weird force things he was doing, like, you know, absorbing blaster bolts and, you know, lifting an entire freighter. Like at the very end when he revealed that he still wasn't dead, I'm like, oh man, I am 100% okay with this character coming back. Like, I love it when Star Wars can have a villain that still returns and comes back, especially with like a random one-off, almost like this whole series has been. Like, introducing a new villain is always a good thing in my book.
Yeah,
I agree. I think this guy was the best part of the whole series, and I wish he had been more of a presence from the beginning. In the shadow. I mean, I know he was sort of orchestrating a lot of this, but he's apparently a sort of former Jedi, or maybe once Padawan. Mm-hmm. That's unclear. He's got this mysterious path, and he's a foil to Mace Windu. I think there's a lot of interesting thing that could happen here, and they get a good conversation during their fight, but it makes me wonder why he was saved for the end. Maybe there's more plans for him. I don't know.
Like, I kind of want to go back. I haven't yet, and reread all four of these issues together, because I feel like issue four is definitely a good issue, but it doesn't like continue the theme of like the previous three issues. Like, the previous three issues kind of had like, hey, you know, Anita, this pirate, you know, sea for hire, needs to do the right thing. And then she just kind of drops off in this last issue. It's like, hey, I got a cool villain I want to write and introduce. And that's awesome. He's a really cool villain. But it feels like the main central conceit of this story is just kind of like hand waved at the end.
So I talked about this a little bit before, that I think it felt to me that like this was almost like an Odyssey frame, like, type story structure of, like, you have one, you know, you're going out to do the thing, you hit like a few road bumps along the way, and you get to the like last one at the end, and it's like, okay, now we're done. You know, like, we're like, it's like roadblock, 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 and then you get your goal at the end. Going back to it though, I like the Shroud specifically, because like, not only is he like a physical match for Mace Windu, but he's also challenges him a lot, both in his beliefs and just like mentally. And I think, yeah, again, that's an interesting way to take the character, because Mace talks in the beginning even about like what the Jedi believe to Azita, like trying to frame like, this is what we are all about, and now you have someone that can challenge him on that. So I thought that was pretty cool, and again, if he's going to come back, I think that could be very interesting.
Yeah, because Mace Windu is kind of like the definition of like the orthodox, like, you know, like, we believed in the Jedi Order because Jedi is order, and, you know, we have to do the good things because we're Jedi and we don't do bad things. You know, like, he, you see a very cut and dry sort of, like, you know, straightforward Jedi and Force sort of person, and introducing a character who's like, hey, like, I'm not a Sith, so I'm not, like, the evil bad guy sort of thing, but I'm also believe that the Jedi are doing the wrong thing by being so ordered and structured here. It's kind of interesting. Again, I'm reading The Rise of the Red Blade, and it's fun seeing, like, you know, how are people viewing the same thing, and, like, you know, how some people will chafe underneath, like, different structures and different orders here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, speaking of, he does call himself, like, the path of the Haddle, or the Haddle path here. Do you think we have any relation to the Nihil here? And the path of the open hand?
I don't think so.
No, I'm good. Yeah.
I doubt it too. It just definitely, there's like, it seems like there are snippets of like, you know, the Force will be free in his speech. And, like, you know, that sort of.
There's no light side, no dark side, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's all just power. There's definitely some parallel thinking there. And I don't know, maybe it could be a descendant of that. I can't imagine they would directly reference that. I know that we've seen some Nile stuff in Charles Soule's Star Wars run. I think this is just yet another group of potentially Force adept people that we didn't know about before.
Yeah, and again, yeah, it seemed like he was former Jedi of some sort. I thought another interesting quote he has at some point is, like, after Mace dispatches his little lackeys, he basically says to him, followers need someone to follow, leaders need someone to lead. Each is reliant on each other, a perfect closed system of mediocrity. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
He has no respect for do good or not do good, but the people who work for him or follow him, whatever.
Absolutely not.
So yeah. You know, neat dude, neat of villain structure. I said, like, there was, I did love the moment where, like, you know, Mace Windu, like, cuts out the landing struts and drops the freighter on him, but he, like, Terminator picks up the whole thing up. It's like, okay, like, I sure hope this guy comes back, because it's, I want to see more of this guy now.
I also thought that was a bold move by Mace. Like, he thought that was going to kill him, which, I mean, Mace clearly isn't entirely adverse to killing. He cuts off Jango Fett's head about 10 years from now.
He bisects three dudes, like, you know, 2 hours before this.
That is true.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. but still, like...
But he doesn't kill worms.
No. But dropping a ship on a dude, that's hardcore. And then, yeah, there's that famous issue of Spider-Man where he comes up from the rubble, and this kind of makes me think of that.
Oh, yeah. I thought another interesting thing is where we are left off outside of the conflict itself is with the status of the Coaxium Ultra, is that they blew up the ship with it, but they still have, Zeta Crew still has the formula for it, and they still have a sample of it. So it is, you know, and she says, I'm giving it to the Jedi. So I get, you know, we're led to believe, obviously, at the end of this miniseries that the Jedi would get it. I'm assuming the galaxy has not been altered in an insane way like that. Well, I don't know how insane it is either, but, like, I don't know, dude. Like, are they going to lose it in transit? Is she going to, like, you know, be defrauding them or something like that?
Or maybe, have Jedi starfighters always been running on
Super Coaxium Ultra
this entire time?
Or maybe they the Jedi just put it away, but then the Empire finds it when they're ransacking the temple post 66.
It's like a inverse raiding, like the Emperor's vaults kind of type thing.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, "Ooh, this is a new power," and that's actually what powers the Death Star.
Oh, this is what powers the Eye of Sion to get what's her face, Morgan Elsbeth to Thrawn in the other galaxy.
Yeah, there we go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're just making shit up now, but, you know, whatever. We're having fun.
That's all.
It's Star Wars. That's all they do.
Right.
But yeah, I think overall, I'm with you, Caleb. I would like to reread this. I'll probably wait till the trade comes out and I'll read all 4.5 issues in a row and see if my thoughts change at all. I think my biggest thing is just that, like, it was very light reading. Like, it all kind of flew by really quickly. And I don't know. I think I just wanted more from it. That's more of a commentary on, like, modern comics. I didn't mention at the top of the episode, but I did finish Zot by Scott McCloud, which was written in 1984. And the amount of, like, story it packs into a 25-page comic is so much more than any comic does now. Just because there's so few panels in comics nowadays. And I feel like the story kind of lacks for it because everything just moves really quickly and then boom, you're at the end. But I liked this issue as a finale. I don't want to be entirely negative. It's still a good story. It's just not very juicy.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely just feels like, I mean, it feels like it's setting up for something greater, and it's hard for me to put in a final judgment on it until I know what that is. I'll say that. So
exactly. It definitely feels like this would be the first, like, 3 hours of a video game, you know?
Yeah,
I could see that. Yeah, I mean, if I think that's another thing is, like, I think future context could totally change how I see this if Mark Bernardin or even someone else comes back and writes just the next Mace Windu story. And that doesn't even have to be featuring Azita Cruz. I think that her role is done. That said, it'd be cool to see her again. I could also see her popping up like in a future Aphra story as an older woman.
Yeah.
You know, for she's sure. been doing whatever pirate smuggling for the past 30 years. And now here she is after the Return of the Jedi, let's say, and helping out Aphra. Like, that'd be a cool callback.
So yeah, there's
a lot of potential here.
Like, she definitely doesn't feel like a Bond girl that's, like, for, like, a bare term, disposable.
No.
But she definitely, I would have, like, if I had to write down a list, there'd be, like, 20-hour characters from comics I'd like to see before her. But maybe that's just because of recency bias. And, like, I've already, you know, I've gotten her. It'd be, I would like to see people that I haven't seen in comics show up in a while.
That's fair. I will say, if this is like, you know, ends up being a some sort of like prequel to another story, it'd be hilarious that we would have Revelations being a prologue to this mini series, being a prologue to a fuller story somewhere else,
which will be the prologue to the next to the book. That will the next comic yeah. will be the prologue to Glass Abyss.
Yeah. We, you know, for all we talked about the High Republic having those issues, Revelations is really kind of a pain in the ass for, you know, telling people how to read these books. Luckily.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's another place where Keep stories told in Phase 3, by the way.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We didn't mention Revelations. Shoot. I know that it's not much of a story, but it's there. Luckily, everything from that Revelations, except so far the Rick Duel story, has a great paperback that it's coming out in. So trade readers, you won't even know that Mace's story started in this weird one shot. And I hope we find out soon where it's continued.
Yeah, for sure. Any kind of final thoughts, I guess, on the series as a whole then? I think we kind of set our piece, but
yeah, like it was fine. Like, if you're a big Mace fan, absolutely pick it up. Like, if you're in it for like the big overarching Star Wars comics, you know, maybe wait until it gets like collected in a big, you know, paper or hardback there, so we can get the greater context of what it's trying to package with.
For sure. Well, just a look ahead at next week. We have a single issue coming out, and that is Star Wars number 46, the Operation to Rescue Mon Mothma. So we'll be back for that, and also just our episode 100, I guess, celebration of sorts. So look forward to that. But that'll do it for this week's episode of The Cosmic Force. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're looking for other great podcasts about Star Wars, nerd culture, and sports, be sure to check out the rest of our lineup on the UTini Podcast Network. We'd also appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to us. If you're already a proud member of the United on Patreon, thank you so much. An extra special thank you goes to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Bezinski on our High Council, and Captains James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo for all of their Mason support. You can head on over to Discord. We're continuing the conversation about this week's comics in the SW Comics channel. Huge shout out to our editor Kyle for all his excellent work in getting us to your feet so quickly, and Wes for his UTini Network support. Thanks as always to our fantastic listeners. That is it for us this week. May the Force be with you, and we will see you next time.